In the river, Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
One of the swimmers on the U.S. Olympic team could miss out on a trip to Beijing. Jessica Hardy, the AP reports, has tested positive for a banned substance, though her agent says the test is confusing and denies that she took anything. Comic book geeks, unite.
Forget about Metropolis. It's San Diego, the place to be for the nation's superheroes.
I do have a Wonder Woman cape, and I have a Superman cape from my husband, but he doesn't know it yet.
Comic book fans, sci-fi buffs.
I'm a Star Wars fan. Yoda's my favorite.
Fanboys here by the tens of thousands.
Our attendees are everything from young girls and young boys to doctors, lawyers.
David Glancer is with Comic-Con.
You love movies? It's all about movies. If you love comic books, all about comic books, games, toys.
The nation's biggest comic book convention now in its 39th year. In San Diego, Todd Starnes, Fox News Radio.
A New Zealand judge has had it. Tired of parents giving their kids bizarre names, making a 9-year-old girl a ward of the court in a custody case so she could get a new name to replace Tallulah Does the Hula from Hawaii. A name the judge says so embarrassed the girl she refused to tell it to people, instead just going by Kay. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
You're listening to 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com, the official stations of New Rock City, the place where you can enjoy a wholesome family entertainment experience.
Dry cleaning. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I have a real thing about this, and I've been telling you for years that when it comes to custom quality dry cleaning, you know, where you get your clothes back in perfect shape without that awful chemical cleaning smell, there's only really one dry cleaner that I know of in all of Westchester you can always count on. Scott Solomon Solo Clean. It's on the Post Road in Mamaroneck, New York. So if you want your valuable clothes returned in like new, pristine condition without that awful commercial cleaning smell, please try Solo Clean. The cost for their professional custom handling is really, incidentally, really the same you're probably paying right now. Solo Clean in Mamaroneck, New York on the Post Road. They're the best dry cleaner in Westchester. I'll go up against anybody on that claim.
Here's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. We do have a flash flood watch in effect right through this afternoon. Our high temperatures for today are expected to average generally about the middle 70s. We do have the chance of some showers and thunderstorms. And the showers and thunderstorms this morning will taper off mid to late morning hours. It's during the afternoon that we get into that clearing trend. At our high temperatures, mid 70s. Another round of showers and thunderstorms, though, are likely in the afternoon and evening. And overnight tonight, it does clear up. Overnight lows in the mid-60s. Mostly sunny on Friday. Friday's highs middle to upper 80s. Fair skies at night in the upper 60s. Saturday back to partial sun. Clouding up in the afternoon with a chance of some showers and thunderstorms. Again, middle to upper 80s on Saturday. Sunday's weather is looking mostly cloudy. Again, the chance of some showers and thunderstorms. Our high temperatures middle to upper 80s. Monday, a little bit less likely as far as showers are concerned, but it will be partly sunny. And our highs will reach the middle 80s. Nice weather for Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. Mid-80s each day. I'm meteorologist Heath Pelletieri for WVOX and WVIP, the Whitney Radio Network.
The latest forecast from the 1460 WVOX Weather Center, brought to you by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
1460 WVOX.
Now, live from Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX, this is Conversations with Ernie Davis, with former Mount Vernon Mayor Ernie Davis. You can join in the conversation now at 914-636-0110. Now, here's Ernie Davis.
Good morning. This is new. I sort of like that. That's great. as was said, this is Ernie Davis and Conversations with Ernie Davis. And this morning we have a producer, I've known him for some years, and I know tangentially what he's about, but I want to get into some detail. He is Bob Lebensol. He is a producer, a young man that we need to know more about over these waves. He has his own radio show that follows right behind this one. But it occurred to me that he's doing some things that that ingratiates the community. I think if we are going to be a people other than frontiers men, we're going to have something else to soothe the savage beast. And I think we are more than guns and violence and meat and potatoes. There's another thing that they are creative spirits. And I think that if we see, we are so quick to cut out, if you go to schools that are being challenged, we're very quick to cut out arts programs, and that's the first thing we cut out, as if there was no educational value in that. And I think that's absolutely wrong. It's short-sighted, and it does not address the needs of people in the end. And we grow up a very tunneled vision, and I think some of our leaders, if they had gone through plays and art and had an appreciation for the artistic side, we'd be a better country for it. And in fact, you can judge a people. I'm an architect, and one thing we learned in architecture history, you can tell where a society is by the way it builds. You can look at the politics, you can look at the economics, you can look at how people feel about themselves with the way they build. And you can look at materials that is used and to see where the scientific thing is. If you go down, for instance, Park Avenue, you wonder why you have all those glass buildings. And And Ludwig Mies van der Rohe, one of the leading architects in the world, he did the Siegmunds building. And that was a, and across the street, that was the Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, I think it's a Lever House. And those were two giants, and that influenced Park Avenue, the development. Why isn't it masonry? Because masonry became too expensive, and economically it made sense to have curtain walls than to have those masonry buildings that we love and appreciate. And that's directly tied into the economics of the time. And now there are some bad illustrations of the curtain wall, but those were the two. A very outstanding use of the curtain wall. But back to Bob Lebensol. Bobby, you have the Star Biz production, and what is that all about?
Well, good morning, Ernie. Thank you for calling me a young man. I love it when people don't really, they look at me and they don't know how old I really am.
Everything is relative.
Well, Methuselah was probably looking young at 500.
Right? Yeah, hey, you know.
Well, I lost track of the question. You want to know about...
Oh, well, Star Biz...
Well, Star Biz Productions, I've had that for, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
Give me a little
25
bit.
25 years.
Who is Bob Lebensol?
Well, okay, from the perspective of my parents, my friends, my business associates, he's all different people.
Well, walk me through, where did you grow up? Who influenced you?
I was born and raised in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And
what part of the Bronx?
Near the Washington Bridge, which is the Washington Heights Bridge.
Oh, okay.
University Avenue, not far from Tremont Avenue. Shakespeare Avenue was the name of the street near Featherbed Lane, two of the most colorful names.
Mm-hmm.
I was born as a young person.
Well, that's good to know.
I went to Taft High School, William Howard Taft High School, and then to City College. And part of what defines me is that I couldn't really sit still very well. I wasn't I was not a kid or a young man who went through the routines as they're laid out for a Jewish boy growing up middle class Bronx. You know, you go to high school, you go to college, you get a job, you marry, you have kids, you die. You know, that was never me. Still isn't me. I traveled. I became a musician early on.
Let's step back. You couldn't sit still. So what happened?
So I
how did the teacher?
The teachers didn't care for what I did because I was one of those disruptive children. Because, you know,
were you labeled?
Well, you know what? Today I probably would have gotten a designation of ADD, and they probably would have stuck Ritalin down my throat. They probably would have said this kid is in need of medication. Thank goodness I was alive at that time and not this time, because who knows how that changes a person's life. You start feeding drugs to a kid, you change his whole consciousness. And do you make him a better student? Maybe so. But what is the point of being a good student if the stuff that they're teaching you, other than reading, writing, and arithmetic, is a matter of individual interest?
So what did they do with you?
Well, they just let me keep on going. I was smart enough to pass my subjects. I was a good reader. I knew basic arithmetic, no problem. So I wasn't like a lot of kids today. They just don't even address the reading very well. And a lot of kids, because I've been in the education system, I've seen this firsthand. A lot of kids went on to high school and they couldn't read very well. They still do. There are kids in high school that read very haltingly, and that's a shame of our
Why
system.
Why is it? How do they pass tests and if they can't read?
They don't have to. The tests are they make them pass. They don't pass. Or they make the tests. They make the curves. They make it easy. They take a kid who can barely read and say, okay, that's good enough.
I see. They don't get them the hell away from them.
Get them out, and because it's a production line.
Yeah,
it's a production line. If you are in a factory and you're manufacturing bottles, you don't stop the line because a few bottles are messed up. Get them out. Then you have seconds at the end. You throw them out, or in case of society, they go to jail, or they wind up in bad jobs, or they're miserable because nobody stops to say, "Wait a minute, let's take this bottle." And let's address it. Let's take it out of the line. It has special needs. Let's address it. They don't do that. And now I haven't been in the education system for a few years. You know, I am a certified guidance counselor. I have worked in the schools. I've even tutored in Mount Vernon. When I go on those little side trips, I forget where I'm going.
No. We were talking about how they treated you.
My mother was called to school a lot, and my mother went. You know, she went to school, and I was...
So what did she say when she went to school?
Well, she didn't say like your mother said, you could beat him, just don't hit him in the face. She didn't do that. I guess she said he's a smart boy, but he acts out at home too, and he's a problem, and, you know, we hope that someday he straightens out.
Well, Jews tend to take a different approach. I noticed that. I think Italians and blacks are the two groups that I've watched, and they are very similar in, a corporal type of. Jews tend to, try to understand this crazy little kid. I watched that as a Southerner who came under a different system. I think, and I'm making a generalization, but I think it holds up. Jews tend to want to understand.
It's probably accurate as a general assumption. Yeah. In my case, my father was distracted. He had his own separate life outside of the family, so he wasn't a good parent. He didn't really know what being a good parent was. He thought that if you put food on the table and provide shelter and clean sheets, his job was done. My mother was a little better. She was she would read bedtime stories to me and to my brother. My brother could read when he was practically an infant, so he didn't need that as much. But my father would hold it in. He was one of those guys that when you finally get on his last nerve, he blows. Yeah. So he beat me up good a couple of times, but not in response necessarily to what I had done, just because he had reached his limit.
So maybe I did enough.
10 things.
You're right.
And then on the 10th thing, whereas I had gotten away with 10, he knew. He said, "Oh, don't do that, don't do that, don't do it." Bam.
Mm-hmm.
So I took my lumps. So I don't know what that really... I mean, I wasn't raised up properly, but that's not what this is about, because I turned out okay. Mm-hmm. What I did, though, after that childhood thing and in trouble, I got through high school, and my father actually pulled some strings to get me into City College as a non-matriculated student.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have the grades or anything. I never took an SAT or a GRE in my life.
What made you want to go to college?
You know, that's a great question. It was like you said, that's what Jews do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you don't really, nobody presented me with options. They said, this is what you do. This is what your life is. This is the carpet upon which you will walk for the rest of your life.
You know, I was on, as a Southerner, all of this was new to me. I came here in 1960, right after school, right after college, and I was 21. And I couldn't tell a Jew from a Puerto Rican, from a Greek, or anything. I mean, that they were... If they weren't black, I didn't know what the hell they were. But anyway, I start to learn, and I start to learn the emphasis people put on different things. I worked around as an architect. I was always with white folks, and so that made me much more aware of the differences in the ethnics. One day I was coming home on the subway, and it was interesting to listen to people. And you do create stereotypes for people. And this guy, he was obviously Jewish, and he was saying, "My mama wanted me to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Hell, I could hardly get out of high school. Yeah. She wants me to be a damn doctor."
That's right.
You know? And I started listening to different groups and how they relate to different things. Your father, and another thing, Jewish fathers, as a generalization, are not all that active.
Well, I don't know. I only know my family, really. I can't really speak for others. I don't think fathers typically in America are as active as mothers.
Absolutely.
Are they?
They leave the child.
Mostly. I think there's a few fathers that know what parenting is about and enjoy it and get into it. But I think the culture of America, white, black, Italian, whatever.
I think it's
whatever,
a culture of the world.
Maybe the world, even.
Yeah.
His father is responsible for going out and killing the animals and dragging them home. And then the wife is supposed to clean them, cook them, and pound the clothes in the river and look after the kids. In fact, I think even in the animal kingdom it's that way. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So now you're at City College, and what turned you on there?
Well, subject-wise, science was always my thing. Biology, I tried physics. I didn't take to it. I tried chemistry. I didn't take to those. They were almost obligatory to take them.
Mm-hmm.
I tried astronomy, but I found astronomy is really hard physics when you get down to it. It's not stargazing. Mm-hmm. It's calculating orbits and things. Mm-hmm. So. Biology and psychology. I wound up getting my bachelor's in psychology. I was shooting for biology, but when I hit
biology and chemistry,
anatomy,
accounting and chemistry is related.
Sure.
So,
but when I hit comparative anatomy, and you had to memorize the cranial nerves and the bones and all that, to me, again, that was just rote. That was just memorizing stuff. It didn't require any thought processes, and I didn't have the patience to say, okay, well, if you get through all of this is the hard work, then it opens doors for you, which I understand now, but I didn't then. So what I did was, there was this program on TV called Adventures in Paradise, where this young man had a schooner, if I remember correctly, a schooner, a small schooner. And he'd sail the South Pacific, and it was very romantic. Every week he had a new lady on a new island, and it was just love, and then it was over. And I said, oh, I got to go there. So I packed up my stuff, and I flew out to California.
And how long were you in California?
Quit college. Oh, only a couple of days, because as soon as I got there, I bought a ticket, I think, in New York to California and then to Honolulu immediately. With the intention was to go to Tahiti.
To
beachcomb.
Hang out.
Yeah.
Find yourself.
To get these girls and all that. Yeah, well, to have a romance every week. It's like the fellow on the TV. When I got to Hawaii, I went to buy my ticket to Papa'i'i, Tahiti. I found it was very expensive, but the ticket to Pongo Pongo, American Samoa, was much less because it was subsidized by the government because American Samoa is it's not a possession exactly. I'm not sure the designation, the Commonwealth, whatever it is part of the United States, and the United States is not letting it go because it has a deep water harbor, the best in the Pacific. So I went there instead. So I got off the plane in Pongo Pongo, and I had no place to stay, no place to go, no context, whatever. Here I am in on a tropical island, walking off the plane with a suitcase, nothing. So I made my way into town, and I'm people-oriented enough that I made some contacts, and I found a place to stay. I stayed with some natives, and I wound up going native. I started wearing a lava-lava, which is like, think of a bright print tablecloth wrapped around your waist. It's like a skirt. But that's what people wear down there. So I went with native, you know.
And bare-chested?
Mostly. And if you went just a little bit out of the village, the women were also bare-chested. That's the way it was out there. In town, they had a little more decorum. And so I stayed there for 4 months. Now, I had been in Honolulu 2 months. And then I stayed in American Samoa for 4 months and had wonderful adventures.
How old were you?
22, 23.
Mm-hmm. What did your mother say about that?
Well, the most memorable thing she said at one point was, here's $5, get yourself a can of sardines, no more money. I mean, they couldn't stop me. And I guess they were
happy for the break. What did
your father think? I guess they thought that I was at risk because parents are always looking out for the kids. What are you going to do? My father was just kind of scared of the world in his way. You know, he was he held it close because the world was a scary place. And to me, it wasn't. To me, it was an adventurous place. So
you were too dumb to know.
Youth is, I wouldn't put it that way.
Well, youth has with it the lack of threats, and you don't see the world the same way.
I didn't see it as a dangerous.
Right. You're 22. Dangerous. What the hell? Most movements in the world are started by young folks because they don't see. And it's very important to note that. And when I was in school, we had the freedom rides and all that sort of thing. Because we were young.
And also those were organized.
So. Well, it's just the mentality. I mean, you idealist, you see your place in the world as a change agent. And if you don't do it now, when will it be done? You reject some of the tenets of that parents, for instance, you don't understand consequences the same way you do as you get older, and it's very important. See, in this country, what we are doing is people who would be challenging society in one way or the other. You're going to challenge society. Either it's going to be negative or it's going to be positive. What is happening is that too many times youth are challenged in a negative way because we have put negative things out in front of them, drugs, guns, and all that sort of thing, the educational system.
Yeah.
And so we haven't prepared the people who would be change agents. Now, they are changing. I mean, right now, they're doing things that we don't really like. I mean, you know, but we never connected to us.
What are they doing that we don't like?
Well, the drug culture? For instance, if you don't have if you don't have jobs and stuff, if you have no sense of proportion, you have no sense of future, what is left for you? And you're going to challenge just because you're young. But now I got the utensils to challenge in a very authoritative way. I have a gun, you know, and if you don't hire me, I'll sell some drugs, and that becomes my culture. And then we respond, well, yeah, you do that, and you're going to go to jail, okay? And then you go to jail and you come out. Well, now you've been in jail, we're not going to hire you. So terrible. Now what do? Well, you go back to what you got locked up in the first place for. And so there is a connection, and we need to understand that. We are talking to Bob Levinsohn. We've been talking, the first part is his background. We're going to take a break, and conversations with Ernie Davis will return right after the break.
The flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com. Now, the latest update from Fox News Radio.
Fox News Radio, I'm Don Matheson. Tropical Storm Dolly still packing a punch.
We've gotten 10 to 20 inches of rain in some locations, and the rain is not over, and it's proceeding westward over other portions of South Texas and northeastern Mexico.
Richard Knabb is a senior hurricane specialist with the National Hurricane Center. He says the storm is expected to weaken to a tropical depression. Caught up in a political test of wills, a Senate energy bill could be headed towards a crash landing.
Another key Senate procedural vote is set for Friday on a Democratic bill to curb speculation in the oil markets. The GOP, though, is insisting they also get a vote on allowing more drilling in the U.S.
Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz in Japan. Folks are sweeping up after a 6.8 magnitude earthquake struck about 280 miles north of Tokyo, 100 people hurt, high-speed bullet train service disrupted, no damage to a local nuclear power plant. Fox News, we report, you decide.
It's tough to break into a career.
Everybody wants to hire someone with experience.
But how can you get experience if no one will hire you?
Employers like to see that you've done the hands-on work.
In the Guard, you can get paid training in your specialty, then go out and apply those skills in the civilian world.
I wouldn't be where I am today without the Guard.
I'm serving my country, and I'm succeeding in the National Guard.
Call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask how you can get the job skills you need for the career you've always wanted in the National Guard.
Sponsored by the New York National Guard, aired by the New York State Broadcasters Association and this state.
Energy drives our nation's economy and is an important part of our daily lives. By taking steps to become more energy efficient, we can all save money and help reduce our nation's overall energy demand. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, encouraging you to use Energy Star products and appliances such as dishwashers, washing machines, and thermostats. They can reduce your energy bills by up to 30%. Replacing your existing light bulbs with Energy Star qualified fluorescent lights in the lamps and fixtures throughout your home will save up to 50% on lighting costs. By installing Energy Star storm windows and double pane windows, you can reduce energy loss in your home by 25 to 50%. You have the power to make a difference. By using Energy Star products, you can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
More information on Energy Star products and savings can be found at www.energysavers.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Let us tell you about a New York lifestyle right here in New Rochelle, The Lofts,
at New Rock at 145 Huguenot Street, featuring sophisticated oversized rooms, 11-foot ceilings with tinted floor-to-ceiling glass windows, and panoramic views of Long Island Sound, top-of-the-line tile bathrooms, state-of-the-art kitchens, including a microwave, a frost-free refrigerator, and a spacious dishwasher. There are full-sized washers and dryers, stunning wall-to-wall carpeting, and abundant closet space. Close to the train station, restaurants, and all shopping, the Lofts at New Rock also offers a cardio fitness center, a business center fully equipped with computers and internet access, plus a conference room and a comfortable lounge. 24-hour maintenance and security is their policy. In other words, the apartments and the living experience at the Lofts at New Rock is the ultimate. Large studios and fabulous 1- and 2-bedroom apartments are available for sale. Call them at 914-632-1200.
Here's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. We're starting off with showers and thunderstorms for the morning hours. More variably cloudy for the afternoon, a few sunny times, and again, the chance of a gusty thunderstorm. Some heavy downpours are possible with those this afternoon. Highs today, mid-70s. For tonight, mostly cloudy. Some showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Overnight, low temperatures, mid-60s, but it does clear up overnight. Mostly sunny on Friday. Friday's highs in the upper 80s. Fair at night, upper 60s. Saturday, partial sunshine. High temperatures for the day, rains in the mid to upper 80s, chance of a shower, thunder shower, afternoon or at night on Saturday. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX and WVIP, the Whitney Radio Network.
1460 WVOX.
Now, back to Conversations with Ernie Davis on 1460 WVOX with former Mount Vernon Mayor Ernie Davis. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Now, once again, here's Ernie Davis.
Hey, we're back, and of course we have a producer on the show, Bob Levinsohl. Bob and I were taking a journey down to from his childhood, and I was interested. You see a person, and you don't know all that much about him unless you start asking questions about him. And then you start to understand how they think, and because of the forces that shape them. This is what we're trying to do. And what I gleaned into his background is I got a sense of his mother and his father. And a glimpse of the society that produced him. And I always wonder, and I think people, start getting aged, they forget about the forces that shape them, and they see no construction or connection to the things that are shaping our young folks now. I am about the business of saying we are inextricably intertwined, and everybody on the county board used to say that, and it's absolutely true. We put down markers for children, and they come back either pay on demand or as a deficit, and we pay for it. If we don't pay now, we will pay later. And unfortunately, we're paying in ways that I don't think is productive. I was just reading Paul Redd's paper, and I must take my hat off to Paul. Some of these papers I really get so teed off, I throw down because of all they do is bring out negative things. And I was just reading from Marion Wright Edelman an article, and it was about Homeboy Industries, and Hope Has a New Address. And it was talking about Homeboy Industries is the largest gang intervention program in the United States, and it is on the front ranks among the best practices for diverting young people from the pipeline to prison, a trajectory. That leads to marginalized lives, imprisonment, and premature death. And this is what I believe. I believe in that concept, and I think that we have an obligation to rescue people, and it's not what we do for ourselves that's important, and that's not what we'll be judged by. We'll be judged by what we do for others.
And on that note, Bob, you're doing things for others in ways that we should know about and support. And you do Broadway productions, off-Broadway productions. How is that going?
Well, I haven't done a Broadway production yet. I'm writing a play now, a musical mm-hmm. play. I've been a musician, as I said, for many years.
What do you play?
I play guitar and keyboards.
Oh, yeah.
And I write songs, and I do perform from time to time. I've been performing at senior centers lately. Mm-hmm. But I had a whole part of my life where it was Mr. Bob and Howie. Mm-hmm. I had a partner. I lived in Brooklyn, and we played in a number of different places.
What kind of music?
We did mostly 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. And a few originals. As I say, I'm a songwriter, but I've always found that when you are performing for audiences that don't know you, you throw them a song that you may love. This song, you may have heard it because you played it yourself 100 times or 1,000 times, but the people hear it for the first time, they want the familiar things. Even when name acts go out, they have to play their standards. They may want to play their new stuff, but they have to play the standards. So we mostly played covers, mostly rock and roll from the 50s, doo-wop, 60s, 70s, some Beatles songs, mm-hmm. and some ballads. Howie was much more outgoing than I was. I would stand there with the guitar and play, and mm-hmm. he'd have the microphone just walking around and involving the
sing?
Audience. Yeah, we both sing.
Mm-hmm. What's the group? It's a Jewish group. They broke up. They were very popular.
Not the Beatles. They weren't Jewish.
No.
No, Jewish group. Dion and the Belmonts, they were Italian.
He had a Jewish afro.
Simon and Garfunkel. Oh, yeah.
And Simon,
I don't think Paul Simon is Jewish. I'm not sure. Maybe Art Garfunkel is. Maybe he is.
I don't know. The name sounds Jewish.
But he is, of course, perhaps America's most brilliant songwriter.
Yeah.
He, you know, to be mentioned, my dream is someday to be mentioned in the same breath as Paul Simon. That's how good I think he is.
He's
got skills that I don't have. He's a better guitarist. He's maybe a better singer. I can't evaluate that.
It's not just the singing,
songs he writes.
It's the sound that he writes.
They're sublime. I listen to him. I say, how does he write that stuff?
Yeah.
You know. Well. And when I analyze it, the chords are not all that sophisticated. They're playing chords, but he extracts melodies and puts poetry to those.
Yeah.
You know,
I really
love
like
to learn more from him if I could.
Yeah, he did great. Some stuff with Africans and
yes, Graceland album. He did a lot of stuff.
I have that album, and it's really,
I think, is one of his best.
It's really.
But he did something in South America too. Something of the Saints. Something, I forget what they called it. It wasn't as good, but he's very universal. He goes everywhere.
And that's what I like about him.
I admire him for that too.
Yeah, he's and you know, another guy I like is James Taylor.
I never got that much into James
Taylor. I love James Taylor. I mean, and there's something, I'm a Southerner, so some of it I can see comes out of the African community.
Some of his music, really?
Oh, yeah. He's influenced by that.
Oh.
Sure, you can see it. And there's a spirituality that he brings to those songs. And it's quite simple. I mean, it's Billy Joel. I love Billy Joel.
I like some of his stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I think these guys are great. So, this musical that you're writing, what is it about?
Well, I started out writing. I have a lot of songs for it, songs that I wrote previously and some songs I've written for it. In fact, I was collaborating with someone, talking about Italy during the break. Mm. I was collaborating with an Italian man who was here, a classical pianist, and he had to go over because of the nature of his visa, and when he tried to come back, they wouldn't let him in. Mm. They sent him back home. So I went to Italy to work for a while on this song. On the,
what
on the
part
musical.
Of Italy?
Comune Nuovo was the name of his village. It's in the Milan area.
Oh, I see.
And he took me around. He took me to Venice.
I've never been to Venice. I'd like to go to Venice.
I had never been to Italy before, and Venice was the place I wanted so much to visit. So we were sitting around chatting. I was there for most of a week. we were sitting around chatting, and I said, yeah, I'd like to get to Venice someday. He says, well, let's go. It's only a three-hour train ride. So we got up crack of dawn, jumped on the train, took it for 3 hours, 3.5 hours, whatever. And we spent the day in Venice. I was in heaven.
Yeah, I was in heaven.
The pizza, by the way, is better in New Rochelle than it was in Venice.
You know,
the Four Corners pizza is much better than...
I had a lot of my friends are Italian, and we went to this Italian restaurant. I give it a plug, Lincoln Lounge. I love Lincoln Lounge, located on West 1st Street, on the corner there. And... it's the oldest, I think, restaurant in Mount Vernon, Lincoln Lounge. And the food is great. And so I had, you know, the broccoli rabe, my friend had a personal-sized pizza with a thin crust. Mm. And I was in Italy. And pizza here is an American invention.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the way... And certainly the way it's cooked, because it's not the same. And
but we're not talking about Pizza Hut, which is an abomination.
No, well, Pizza Hut, well, you know, America tends to, once it gets a good thing, it starts to vulgarize it.
Yeah, Pizza Hut is kind of like white bread with ketchup and American cheese.
Well, that's for people, somehow it appeals. I guess it appeals to people, but it wouldn't appeal to me. I think it's too thick.
But there are some good local places. I'll plug them again. The Four Corners Pizzeria in, I guess it's Pelham. The Four Corners is where the Post Road meets Pelhamdale Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
They got good stuff. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Well, you got the Johnny's Pizza is I think the one that. Pizza is measured. The standard is.
Where is that?
In Mount Vernon.
Oh, you have
Johnny's Pizza. Yeah.
You're gonna have to give me the address. I have to check it out.
It's been written up many times.
Oh.
See, the thing about cities and how if people are given an opportunity to do what they really want to do, and I'm looking at the school systems where. Sometimes we force people into doing things that we think they need to do, but they don't want to do. And Mount Vernon, for instance, is a place where this has turned out writers, obviously sports people.
And actors.
Actors.
Denzel.
Broadcasters.
And doesn't P. Diddy come out of there?
P. Diddy comes out of Mount Vernon.
And how much Heavy more successful D. could you possibly
yeah,
be?
Yeah, Heavy D comes out of Mount Vernon. Denzel Washington comes out of Mount Vernon. In fact, Sidney Poitier used to live quite a while in Mount Vernon. And, of course, Ossie Davis lived
before. He was in New Rochelle, right?
Well, but he lived in Mount Vernon first. Oh. And then his mother died in... in Mount Vernon. She stayed in Mount Vernon all her life. And so Mount Vernon has turned out a lot of positive things. The thing that bothers me is that if we don't have the crucibles to nurture that potential, it's not going to keep coming. It doesn't just keep coming. Mount Vernon has always been a city of change, a city that, for instance, 10% of it is Brazilian already.
Brazilian?
Mm-hmm. Huh. In 20 years, Mount Vernon will not, I say 20 years, some people say less time than that.
How will it change?
It will be a much, there won't be a African majority. So now you got Portuguese, you have Dominicans, you have also, you got 98 different countries in Mount Vernon already. So the future of Mount Vernon has always been a place where change, where people come and they leave.
Well, it changed tremendously while you were mayor over there. The whole Sanford Boulevard development,
yeah.
Which I'm generally against big developments, but that turned out pretty darn good. I shop there. I live in New Rochelle.
Yeah.
And whenever I think about shopping, you got a Target, you got a Best Buy, a Staples, I think.
Yeah.
Some really good stores that I love to shop, so I'm up in there.
Well, see, when you are mayor, what you have to understand is where you are. If you're going to, the economics is very important. Jobs are very important. And we fought for 4 years and 15 lawsuits to produce that. And people take it for granted now, but that was quite an undertaking. To have those major stores, and we hadn't had a major store in Mount Vernon in 50 years.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, we have a lot of those.
Now, I don't know what was there before. What did that development replace?
Pepsi-Cola had a place there. Generally, it was decadent.
Pepsi-Cola, they had a bottling plant or offices?
They had a bottling plant. Was it bottling?
So it was industrial rather than commercial.
It was a commercial-industrial combination of it. And then you had a bus depot, and then you had an old warehouse. Nothing. Luckily, we had at the time, what we did is we looked at the city, and the city was in terrible places economically. And fortunately, we were able to plan it out. We took Sanford Boulevard because we felt that was the greatest, had the greatest possibility of
success.
Well,
it's right off of the highway,
right.
The Hutch.
And that
it's a wide street.
And it attracted people.
It's perfectly situated. So, but you're an architect, so of course you looked at it, and that just jumped out at you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You didn't need studies. You said, of course, right here.
Yeah. And
put a couple of trees in and... Yeah, we closed the book.
And we had a combination that worked. We had Sal Pepe, and I can't say enough about him. I knew him since I was a building commissioner, and he and I sat down with a developer, and that developer. We had three people who believed. You had the developer. Who was crazy enough to? We had a good relationship, and he was adventuresome, and the reason you had both of them is because I made the developer to develop the the east, I mean the south side of the street was very easy, relatively easy. It had over 1,000 pounds that's holding up the whole thing, but the right side, which had rock,
the north side,
was much more difficult. And I said, you can only develop the south side if you develop the north side first. And we had to dig 20 something feet down through rock,
bedrock,
and we had to change a sewer system, the county sewer system, had to reroute that.
I remember the fuss about that. The county was...
And they tried to stop it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and I say to people, and history will bear it out, if we had not been successful in that development, and a lot of people still don't understand that, unfortunately, some of them are in office, but we went through hell to get it. But if we had not done that, we never would have had 1,000 jobs. We never would have had about $5 million in taxes, retail sales taxes coming into that place. So, I'm very happy, but you don't stay happy long. You look at the next thing. But what that did is anchored Sanford Boulevard. Now Sanford Boulevard, instead of being a place not to go, everybody's trying to get there.
Oh yeah.
So those are things that make us feel pretty good about it. But back to you. So you're writing this. What are you going to do with the songs that you?
Well, I started writing a play, and I won't bore you with the storyline. I tried to put romance and tragedy and spirituality in it, and it was the very briefest sketches. It opens with a man pacing
the stage, waiting for a phone call. He hopes his estranged wife will come back to him. So he gets the phone call, and she says no. So he's distraught. He tries to commit suicide. Somebody talks him down off the bridge by singing To Be or Not to Be, which is a song I wrote for this purpose. Okay. And then he goes about, he meets somebody else, and then there's amnesia. And, you know, I got so tired of telling the story because I said, well, you know, amnesia's been done. Suicide's been done. I don't want to use up my good songs on a story like this. So I had written the first act.
A story like this.
I had written the first act. Yeah.
Do you know what you said? Well, a story like this that you created.
I created it, but when I looked at it carefully, their devices were all borrowed from things I had seen. I didn't consciously say, okay, I'm going to borrow from Humphrey Bogart here and John Solomon there. But when I looked at it, I said, you know what? These devices are not new. When I wrote it, it was, oh, yeah, okay, he gets amnesia. Oh, yeah, when he goes into the hospital, the girl who got amnesia is wearing the bracelet, even though he's been temporarily blinded because he went to war. You know, I said, okay, wait a minute. Got too convoluted. So the story right now is in limbo.
I got great
songs, but the story's in limbo. But I am shooting for a Broadway production of this.
Well, you know.
However I get there.
How do you get your inspiration?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. Einstein said that imagination is more important than intelligence or anything else. Imagination is, if you have a fantasy life. I mean, as a bright kid in a boring school with a difficult home life and not a lot of friends, I was forced to create things in my mind to keep me company. So having a rich fantasy life, at a certain point, I realized that I could put these things I made up out and people would find them interesting. I was a teenager and I had picked up a guitar and I was starting to learn. I was playing along with the songs on the radio. That's basically how I learned. And I learned all those songs. And then I started writing my own lyrics to those songs. And the lyrics were pretty good, but you can't sell someone else's tune. So I started writing tunes and they were very primitive at first. And they got better over the years. So,
have you sold any of your songs?
So I've never sold a song. Never sold a song. I've published articles many times in newspapers and magazines, but I've never sold a song. And honestly, I haven't tried to sell songs.
I did it first.
Back in the day, I used to take my guitar, go to Tin Pan Alley, walk in the office, and they'd say, "Sit down and play what you got." So I would play live for these guys. It's not like that today. Mm-hmm. Not like that today, but that's the way it was. And I got a few nibbles. I had demos made at other people's expense in Nashville and in Hollywood and in New York. The people did make demos. They said, "You're good," but nobody ever actually took it to the step where. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you need an agent.
That doesn't mean I'm bad. It means that,
that
I'm not a good
undiscovered
marketer. Right.
People haven't caught up with your talent.
So yet. I decided to become a producer and produce my own things. Mm-hmm. And this way I know they're going to get out there. I don't have to ask someone, please produce my stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do.
Well,
now.
We are coming to an end. And maybe whet the audience on your guest.
Well, my guest is actually Walter Isaacson, who wrote this book on Einstein. Mm-hmm. It's the first book written since all of his papers were released, the first biography. So it's fresh, and he's a wonderful writer, and it's a great book. And I'm looking very forward to.
Have you read the
speaking
book?
With him. I've read most of the book.
Mm-hmm. What is it about?
Well, it shows Einstein as a creative genius, of course. But also as a personal guy who had lots of lovers, two wives, married his first cousin. He was a sailor. Mm-hmm. He loved to sail. He was a classical violinist. He could be very angry, very charming. He was against war. Mm-hmm. But of course, being Jewish in the time of Hitler, he had to modify that somewhat.
Yeah.
So he was a very, very universal guy, very personable, very.
How did Germany take to him, since he was a Jew?
Well, he escaped, along with many other
Lucky people. I think Hitler probably would have killed him or put him to work and said, all right, you had help us make the bomb instead of helping them. Yeah. Maybe if the Third Reich had realized that they had a talented human being there, they might have tried to tap his brain. Otherwise, he's a Jew. Kill him.
Yeah. It's amazing how the human experience can go positive and negative. Throughout history, there have been very few times in history where there have not been wars.
Right.
It seems like
right now.
Yeah, and it seems like that is what men do, and it's a man-made thing.
I agree with you.
It's
natural to our species.
It's natural to the species to want to kill each other for light and transient reason. But please stay tuned for the next show. I'm sure it's going to be very interesting. And this just about does it for us today. Next week we'll be getting inside of what make societies tick or not tick. Thank you very much, Bob. It's been very interesting talking to you. And
always
maybe we can do this again and make it chapter two.
Anytime.
And for you out there, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay in tune. And next week, same time, same place. God bless.
You've been listening to Conversations with Ernie Davis on 1460 WVOX with former Mount Vernon Mayor Ernie Davis. Tune in again next Thursday morning at 9 for Conversations with Ernie Davis only on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.